Live from Burbank, California, home to Forrest Blond and thousands of dying showbiz careers, it's the Marc Maron Show. Where's your Jesus now? Marc Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, of course, and you lurking conservatives, thanks for tuning in. It is Friday. It is the Marc Maron Show. You can go to markmaron.com if you want to have a blog party. For all you terrestrial listeners, sorry about last night. I have no control over the sports outage or the output of sports from KTLK, but you can pick up most of the show online, or you can join up with the premium service at Air America. These things are all unfolding before us. Everything's going to change someday. How's that for optimism? Is that good, Jim?
Yeah, everything's going to change someday.
All right, there's a lot of things to talk about. I'm going to put them off, though. I'm going to put off talking about gas and oil. I'm going to put off talking about the Star-Spangled Banner in Spanish. I will put off talking about terrorism, although they are important, because we've got a guest that needs to do some business. He needs to, he's got to go downtown. He's filing things. He's doing briefs. He's a man on the move, and I don't want to keep him. We told him that the time was now, so we're going to do it. What I want to talk about first, though, a lot happened in the news today. And, well, you know what? Before I do that, why don't we set up the show a little bit? We have a pretty packed show. From the coup, Boots Riley will be here to talk about his new CD, Pick a Bigger Weapon. We've also got the author of Accidental Genius, How John Cassavetes Invented the American Independent Film. Radio veteran Bill Jackson will come on to give me a few pointers. This guy has been around a long time. He was very well known for his interviews. He was on for years out at WTLK AM in New York City. I used to listen to him when I was a kid, when I was very young. And I knew he was out here, but I didn't realize that he would be as available as he was. I don't want to be disrespectful, but he's going to be here shortly. A lot did happen in the news today, and we want to make sure that you're not caught off guard here at the Marc Maron Show. We don't want you to be uninformed. So here's tonight's short order news. Chevron Corporation, the number two U.S. oil company, said today its quarterly earnings rose 49% to $4 billion, topping Wall Street expectations. Meanwhile, scientists are trying to figure out if it's possible to boil Chevron executives down to a liquid and invent a car that runs on slime. After months of disputes over the future of Ground Zero, construction finally began on the 1,776-foot Freedom Tower that will rise on the site of the World Trade Center. The tower will reach a symbolic 1,776 feet, taller than any current building, and the tallest building nobody wants to work in. A California woman is suing her former employers because she was spanked in front of her co-workers. As part of what the company said was a camaraderie-building exercise. Lawyers for Alarm One, that is the company, say she's a little wound up from all the excitement and needs to go right to bed. That's the short order news for tonight. There's a particular speech impediment that's occurring with me right now. I'm not sure what it's coming from or why it's happening. But
nicotine gum, maybe.
I'm not chewing it right now. It seems to be somewhere around the O's and W's.
Okay.
Maybe it'll go away.
I'm all tapped out on excuses for you now.
It's nice to see you too, Jim. Let's engage our guest. This is an interesting booking. This is somebody I've wanted to talk to. Sexuality is certainly a loaded topic, folks, especially when it gets into legal issues around alternative sexuality. Matt Privet has been fighting a legal battle for a while now. He is a metagenderist, and he will explain to us what that is and his struggle for what I think are basic human rights, folks. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you could find time to come down. How would you define yourself exactly? What is a metagenderist?
I'm a metagenderist, also known as a personist.
Uh-huh.
That means I am neither a man nor am I a woman. I am a person. We are all persons, and it's a shame that people define themselves as men and women.
That's interesting. Now, you don't want to. You're just a person.
I'm a person, and so are you, Mark. You are not a man. You are just a person.
Okay. All right. So now, why don't you? Let's talk about these legal issues and some of the struggles that you are engaged in.
Okay. Well, what it comes down to is, you know, I want to be both. We all should want to have everything that is woman, that is man. When I wake up in the morning, I want to be a man because I want a woman to make breakfast for me. But at night, I want to I want to be a woman because I want the dinner paid for me at the restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. There's advantages in being both.
I understand that.
Okay, so, well, I wanted to get a job at Hooters. Have you ever been to Hooters?
I think I was there once. I've been once, yeah.
Okay, and you're probably surprised. I had only been once before I applied, and I'm a big fan. Have you ever seen the T-shirts for Hooters?
Yeah, sure, with the little owl?
Right.
Yeah.
So like you, I thought that it was in restaurant about owls and nocturnal predators and things like that.
Yeah.
And I went there, and there really wasn't a lot to do with owls there at all. It was a lot of women with large breasts, and I thought that was odd. And I decided, well, I'm going to bring, you know, what it should be. There's a lot of owl fans coming here, so I'm going to try to be a waiter here.
Mm-hmm.
They would not hire me, Mark.
Did you tell them that why you wanted to work there, that you thought that they were not representing some people who might want to be there for the owls?
Exactly. Have you ever seen a male waiter there or anyone talking about owls there?
No, I've never have. I've only been there once, but it probably doesn't happen.
It's false advertising. And so I tried to get a job there. I tried to get a job at another Hooters. They would not hire me. They said that they only hire women.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm I have a lawsuit going against them right now, and I'm going to win. It's my goal to have every Hooters be 50% male, or 100% person, as I like to say.
Right. Now, are you sure you don't want what would stop you from going there when you feel like being a woman, and then leaving when you feel like being a man? You know what I mean?
No, I you lost me there for a second.
Well, are you sure you don't want to be a woman?
By woman, do you mean? Do you mean my parts? What makes a woman? Let me ask you that. What makes a woman? What makes you a man? Chromosomes?
I have a penis, and women usually have breasts and a vagina. Is a different.
Okay, so follow that logic. If you have a smaller penis, does that mean you're more woman? If you have a bigger penis, that means you're more man? I don't follow you.
I understand.
So you're defining yourself in a lookist. This is a lookist society, and that's a shame.
Yeah.
What really makes a woman? Someone who's caring. That's what a woman is, right?
But men can be caring, no?
Exactly. So that's why we should be persons. See, you're catching on.
Okay. All right. So now, have you taken this battle anywhere else? Are you fighting for a metagenderist?
Daughters of the American Revolution.
Uh-huh.
I want to be one of them.
Yeah.
I want to do a ping pong show over in Amsterdam right now. They won't let me do that.
A ping pong show meaning that you want to perform in a classically female dominated role of the striptease, the ping pong.
Yes, the ping pong pushers. I don't know how much I can describe what happens there, but a lot of people think only women can do those tricks. It's not true. I can do those tricks as well. I can shoot a ping pong 50 feet. Across the room.
And what was your reaction when you tried to get a job doing that?
I was kicked out of Amsterdam. I'm actually banned from Amsterdam right now.
Is there any way? I guess I'm thinking about surgical solutions where maybe you could have both and maybe open yourself instead of just. I don't know. I'm just shooting in the dark.
Have both. You see, that's disgusting. You're making it about. I want to have my penis. I like having my penis. I'm not going to go too far into that. But, like, for instance, women.
Yeah.
Groupies. Women can be groupies, right?
Yeah.
Can a male be a groupie?
Of course.
No, they can't. You've never heard it. They're called stalkers. Males cannot be groupies. They're called stalkers.
Right.
I want to be a groupie. I want to be able to flash my penis.
Yeah.
And have that be exciting for everyone. But I get arrested when that happens.
But at least you're fighting a good fight. So now what would you do then to level the playing field in terms of between the sexes? I mean, how would you handle that?
Words shape our society.
Mm-hmm.
Semantics. You know that word. You probably talk about it here on the show all
occasionally
the time. Semantics.
I throw it around.
It should be supersonics.
Mm-hmm.
See how that works?
I do. Supersonics.
Instead of you've always heard the whole history thing, and the feminists say, let's call it herstory.
Sure.
It should be called personistory.
Right.
How that makes everyone feel equal that way?
Yeah, sure.
The word hysterical, what's that word imply?
It means, I don't know, man laughing?
Right. Well, not just it means you're going crazy or whatever, but we know that females tend to go crazier than men, so shouldn't it be hystericals? There's all different things, and you don't think about these things. How about Hershey's chocolate? It should be she's chocolate. Include everyone.
But wait, the hysterical thing seems a little sexist to me. Why are you characterizing just women being crazy? Why wouldn't that be personectoral?
I agree. That's what I'm saying. You're following me. Now, for instance, I wish that once a month when I'm being moody, I could say, it's that time of month, and everyone would understand. But they don't give me that. Males don't get that day, that week.
Have you tried it to do that with your coworkers? Or?
I have with my partners, with my coworkers, and I don't get a break. I wish when I was lackadaisical on the job, my boss would just roll his eyes and go, women.
Well,
I don't get that break.
Yeah, but you would be happy if he just said, people.
Yes, person.
Right. Well, Matt Previtt, I wish you the best of luck with your legal battles and your other troubles. And the struggle for personhood, I think, is important. And I appreciate you being here.
I am person. Hear me roar. Thank you.
We will be back with Bill Jackson and some radio pointers. Stay with us. It's the Mark Maron Show.
Now he's sickened hundreds of postal workers. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, folks. You can go to markmaron.com. That's MarkMaron. Clips from other shows. People blogging. Got an email on there yesterday from the website. You can also email us. Mark, listening to your comments on the state of New Orleans put something in my head. I think that Air America should send every host down there to witness the devastation firsthand. Can you give me a name over at corporate that I can contact with this idea? If I knew who to talk to at corporate at Air America, you think my situation would be where it's at? But you can email me. I would just go with the contact. I'm not sure. I think it's a great idea, Keith. He goes on to say, Katrina, New Orleans, FEMA should be at the top of the Democrats' talking points. Nothing demonstrates our beliefs more than this. Everything trickles down from here, if you'll excuse the phrase. The environment, corruption and cronyism in government, corporate abuse, civil rights, it's all there. Thanks again for the great show and mentioning that somebody emailed you about Michael Pollan's book. It was me. Thank you, Keith. We're going to try to keep up with that. We're going to try to keep Shyla Duan in touch with us because she seems to be the New York Times reporter that is exclusively dedicating her time to that beat. And I'm going to stay on top of that and keep her on the show. But I think you, like I said, after I went down there, my entire sense of what happened in New Orleans and what the reality has changed, and I will not let it go. It is the most important topic. It is the best example of all of those things going wrong and basically accumulating in that perfect storm of horror. Our next guest was the premier radio talk show host of WTLK-AM in New York. Some of you out there in New York might remember him. He began his career in the late 70s and was working his craft until his recent career moved to Los Angeles. Bill Jackson has interviewed royalty, vice presidents, movie stars, and anyone that Mr. Jackson thought had something of interest to his listeners. It's a pleasure for me, honestly, who I'm relatively new to this medium, to welcome one of the creators of talk radio, Mr. Bill Jackson. Welcome to the show, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you, Mark. You can call me Bill.
All right, Bill. So you've come out to L.A.
That's right. I came out here 3 years ago to create a TV talk show that I was convinced was going to be great, and that didn't pan out. They told me I was too old, apparently.
Okay, well, all right. Well, you know, I'm sorry to hear that, Bill. You know, I certainly I loved listening to you when I was a kid, and I certainly I hope that you find your place out here. Show business is a little different out here. So what's next for Bill Jackson?
Well, a better question, actually, Mark, would be how do you feel about the choices you made, or actually was quitting your job in New York a good idea?
Okay, I'm gonna learn from the master. What was quitting your job?
Well, I didn't really quit. If you know what I mean, Wait a minute. How does Air America work? And how did you get this job?
I heard about it, that it was happening. I called Janine Garofalo, who's a friend of mine.
See, that's exactly what I mean. It's who you know.
Uh-huh.
I guess it's who you know you get, right?
Yeah, okay.
It's all about who you know and whether you're like 12 or 13 years old.
Yeah, all right. I understand.
It's not a business.
All right. I understand you're a little frustrated, Bill Jackson, and that happens. It happens in this business. You just got out here. I mean, you're a talent. You're a known quantity.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Janine's an actress, right?
Yeah.
Right. What were you, some kind of comedian?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a comedian and actress. I'm a broadcaster.
A broadcaster
for years.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I could probably learn a thing or two from you.
Would you call yourself a liberal? Is that the whole point of this whole show?
I am definitely a liberal, and I am a progressive. There are some things I have problems with. You know, there's issues in the progressive tent or the liberal tent that I have some problems with. Look, Bill, why don't we talk about your days in New York? Because certainly most people would know you from that.
Okay. Well, sure. Those were the good days.
Yeah.
You would consider this talk radio, right?
Yes.
And do you take callers?
Because we're taping the show, we can't really take callers. We did take callers on my other show. And
you recently moved out to L.A., right?
Yeah, I did. Well, I moved back to L.A., Bill. I was actually working in New York doing mornings for Air America. And I came back out here when that ended. That's why I'm here now. We're doing the show out from out here now. That was how I got involved with it. Yeah.
All right. Well. Mm-hmm. That's the way it goes, I guess.
Yeah. So I.
Yeah. But you're still working though. I mean, that's the point. You're working. You're out here and you're working.
Yeah, I'm doing this. I'm doing the show every night, and it's great to have you on the show. So when you were working in New York, did you? Who were some of your favorite interviews? Really?
Agnew was great.
Spiro Agnew. Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. He was not a good guy, but a good interview.
It was a good interview. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. I dug deep. No one ever did that in those days. He was pretty much ignored.
Uh-huh.
But he was the whole cause behind Watergate.
Sure.
I don't know if you know that.
No, I did know that.
And
some of the other interviews.
Agnew was into tape recorders. Other people. I interviewed Prince of Wales at one point.
Uh-huh. That must have been interesting.
I couldn't understand anything he was saying. A lot of questions, no answers.
Right.
Who cares, really? I mean, you know, that's another country.
Okay. Have you been looking for work out here in radio or?
I'm looking for work.
Uh-huh.
That's about it. Any kind of work. Listen to my voice. I mean, my voice.
Okay.
Why am I not hired just because of my voice?
Yeah, I know. Okay. If Bill Jackson is with us. We will come. You know, why don't we calm down a little bit and we'll regroove. And why don't you just hang out and work with us for the day?
Oh, right? I'd be delighted to help.
Okay. Thank you. Bill Jackson is with us and he will stay with us, I think, throughout the show. We'll be back in a second.
Now his profits are obscene. Mark Maron.
Wow, thank you. Bill Jackson.
You want to give me that back?
All right, now let's...
Can we just give it back?
Can we just...
I didn't give that...
Who would do the announcing, me or you? I mean, that's...
All right.
I turned my back for a second and my page is gone.
The idea was not that you were going to audition for Jim's job. It's just that you're going to hang out of respect for what you've done.
Well, who should do the thing? Me. I mean, Jim is an amusing sidelight. But.
Look, Bill, our guest is Bill Jackson. You might know him from his days back in New York at WTLKAM, basically, he kind of set the mold for talk radio back in the 70s, and he's here with us, and he's sitting in.
When AM was big.
Yeah.
AM was big.
He's sitting in, Jim. He's just a guest, okay? So let's not freak out.
Never heard of that station.
All right, look. I got an email here from Ted from Nebraska. Hi, Mark. Once again, the liberal media is spinning the truth for their own narrow, misguided political agenda, just like Bill Clinton used to do every day and Hillary. The lies just keep coming, and we're just supposed to buy it. What gives you the right to speak about subjects which you know nothing about? Well, Ted, I can't... Oh, no. It's happening.
Oh.
I'm turning into him. Oh.
And now, from Radio Halliburton, it's America's favorite late-night far-right radio show, Shark and Awe, with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good evening, neocon! Radio Halliburton, where the truth hurts. Sunday was Earth Day, and there's nothing Mark the Shark hates more than a bunch of liberal skid marks whining to their mommies about global warming.
Boring!
I'll tell you what's burning. That welfare check in your back pocket, Mellow Yellow. Hurry, Democrat. Your pot dealer's down to his last nickel bag.
Oh, I'm a patchouli-scented tree humper. I learned about global warming from the spin doctors. If the planet is getting too hot, I may have to shave my armpits. Boo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Give me $500. I think I need another partial birth abortion.
Hey, Al Gore, you should stop worrying about the environment and start worrying about lumberjacks trying to chop you down because he's made of wood. Get it? Get it, wood. He's made of wood. Hey, let's read some shark email. Mark the Shark, what do you think is causing these high gas prices? Gay marriage. All that petroleum is going for their lubricants. Mark the Shark says the only drilling that should be allowed is in Alaska.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
But hey, people, don't think Mark the Shark doesn't care about Mother Earth. I've created my own alternative fuel supply. Bottle it and sell it, America. Crisis over. Put that in your Prius, Sunflower Rainbow McHomo. Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Oh, man. What happened? Did I pass out?
What was that?
I haven't had that happen in a
while.
You
all right, Mark?
Did I black out?
It appears so, yes.
That hasn't happened since... What's Bill Jackson doing here?
Bill Jackson.
I've been here for a while. Yeah. What do you mean? What am I doing here?
Well, I can't believe Bill. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm regrooving. Sorry, I can't. Thank you for being here, Bill. I remember now. You're here to, hanging out.
I remember
when they
didn't allow multiple personalities on the radio, but I guess anybody can get a job.
That's what sells now.
Except me.
All right. Okay. Let's talk about a couple of things. I found interesting today is that Chevron Corporation's first quarter profits went up 49%. Jim, you were telling me about this.
Mm-hmm.
$4 billion. All right, but there's no gouging going on. I mean, come on, how is that even possible? And dig this. In an average, Exxon, Chevron, and Conoco made a profit of $8.19 per $100 in sales. And they compared this in the article I read to Google, Yahoo, and eBay making about $19.29 for every 100. So I guess if we could run our cars by doing a search for fuel, perhaps that would be a solution. Huh? What's that? Bill?
I just have it's a device that has sound effects. I thought kids like that now. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, all right.
Like those morning shows?
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, all right. Okay.
I don't think that's very appropriate. It's kind of making fun of you, Mark. I don't even think.
Well,
it accents the humor.
Out of respect, Bill, I think I made a joke, so I understand your impulse there. And you know what's interesting about those sounds is they now have these boards that you can computer program with hundreds of sounds,
Oh, really? This large mechanical device that I have is obsolete? Is that what you're saying?
Okay, I'll play along. Sure. Yeah, okay, all right. Now, let me just get into this, because I think this was a fairly deep thought that I had, if I could share it with you, Jim and Bill,
mm-hmm.
is that you got Bush, who is a scion of oil money, am I right? Said there's no way he's going to tax oil profits, but instead... What he wants is to give people incentive for reinvestment. So he keeps saying we need to get off oil, but apparently not until every drop is sucked out of the earth, no matter what the cost is to us and the planet. Bush saying that we need to get off oil, friends, is like a dope fiend saying, I'll kick tomorrow. Am I right? And this whole idea of drilling in the Arctic, all right? Let me just say, first of all, oil analysts have said that to drill in the Arctic would... All right, to drill in the Arctic... All right. Oil analysts said that drilling the Arctic would cost more to get hardly any oil out of there than is even worth it. So I
right.
think the idea that the solution that the Bush and the Republicans are suggesting is to drill into the Alaska Wildlife Reserve, again, is sort of like a junkie taking his mother's pain medicine off the bed table while she lays in the bed.
Man, that is so inappropriate.
Dying of cancer. Is
no, there's
a, dying
there,
of
there
cancer.
Are bombs going off. Oil, come on.
But that's like one little toy, Bill. That's like one little toy. I mean, it's a little sad.
It's like a cry for help from you.
I'm showing. I can stretch out my. I have a ability to do morning radio. I think.
All right.
Who's this guy? He comes in here and I think he's trying to take my place. I think that's what's happening.
Oh, stop it! I thought it would be a good idea to have him on, Jim. I thought it would. You know,
I don't have a budget for those kind of machines.
We've got more machines. Don't say that because we've got real machines. You know, the bill is. I thought I would help him out, and I didn't realize it would turn out like this.
The problem with this, the batteries go dead really fast.
I know. Oh man. All right. Look. Okay, Bill. Okay. All right. We get it. You need a job. Great. So
if anybody wants a morning DJ, I'm here.
Okay. Good. Well, why don't you just hang out and let's keep it quiet for just a couple minutes when we talk about some real stuff.
You got it.
All right. You used to talk about real stuff. What the hell
That's
happened?
That's right. I used to talk about stuff all the time. I can do that. I can talk about anything. Tell me.
Okay. Let's talk about these new numbers.
Numbers 3, 7. Come on.
What? Okay, what about global warming?
Yeah. What about that?
Yeah. What about it?
Yeah. It's bad, right?
It's bad. Yeah. Well, it's not bad in the colder parts of the world, really.
Uh-huh.
You want it to be a little warm, don't you?
Yeah.
What about the Senate scandals going on here?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Tell me about it. Senate scandals?
Yeah.
They're scandalous.
Yeah, it's bad stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me...
Man, this guy doesn't know... This is pathetic.
I know.
A better question is, what's wrong with the system, the Hollywood system?
What? Yeah. Well, okay. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. That we struck.
Why aren't they hiring me?
Oh no, man. This is sad. I'm sorry, Bill. I think things are going to turn around for you. Do you have an agent? Have you gone out on some auditions? Are there people? I mean,
a better question would be, when was your last job?
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. I'll learn from the pro, Bill Jackson. What were you doing last? When was your last job?
Just before I moved out here, and just before I was fired.
Okay. I'm going to let me talk a little, do some serious stuff. Can I for a minute? The American death toll in Iraq hit 2,397 yesterday. That's of course upwards of 17,000 injured in Iraq, possibly upwards of 100,000 Iraqis dead. It was the most deadly month this year. 69 Americans this month.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing, Bill? What are you doing?
Nothing.
All right. This is not funny. There's 69 Americans killed this month compared to 31 last month. And now in a related story, Al-Qaeda is losing its power. That's what they said. How could that possibly be when you have 69 Americans? This is the highest number of Americans killed in a month this year, and Al-Qaeda is losing its power. Now, how do you account for this then? Now, this is true. How do you account for the tally? The latest report from the National Counterterrorism Center. This is a national. They did a big report last year. They do a big report every year. 11,000 terror attacks around the world last year, resulting in 14,600 deaths. That is four times the amount of terror attacks than last year. Okay? So, okay, granted, they say that 3,500 of those attacks were in Iraq, and they accounted for about 8,330 deaths, but the indication is that this administration is losing the war on terror. And they don't even consider Iraq as a terrorist haven. But I'll tell you what it is, and I think you'll both agree with me, Bill,
sure.
Is that it is a training camp. It is a country where terrorists from around the world are training, and they are training by using our soldiers as target practice, and now we're caught in a civil war on top of it. It's just another indication that the Republicans have got nothing going into the 2006 elections. They cannot run on global security, and they cannot run on the fact that they are supposedly winning the war on terror. Am I right?
Yeah, I think it can be said that they made a mistake.
What did they make
a mistake on?
I don't know. I just have a feeling everything's wrong, right?
Can you back any of that up? Do you have anything to back that up with, that opinion up with?
I don't like it. I don't like...
You don't like what?
I don't like the whole oil.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
They're being killed.
What the hell happened to you, Bill? Because, I mean, in my recollection, when I used to go to my grandma's house in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, and listen to you on the air out of New York, that you were talking to, like, important people about important things, and now you seem to have very little to say about anything.
Hmm.
What do you...
It's nervous laughter. Yeah. That's what it is. It's just,
I apologize if you think I'm not talking enough. I have opinions on everything.
But it's
not my job to have opinions. It's my job to get the opinions out of other people.
All right. Well, then maybe we should try that with Jim when we come back or something.
I'd be glad to.
All right, we'll be back with Bill Jackson and
we'll be back with me and Mark Maron in a minute.
Wow.
Hey, what?
All right, just let it go.
Heard about the rapture from President Bush, but would like to learn more? Stay tuned for Rapture Watch with Milf Cardinal Milfington coming up next.
This portion of the Mark Maron Show was brought to you by Amalgamated Bank. Tired of paying outrageous check fees and penalties? Come over to Amalgamated Bank.
I overdrew my account, and it only cost me $23.96. That's 4 cents less than Washington Mutual.
Amalgamated Bank. Our fees are slightly lower than everybody else's.
Amalgamated Bank.
And now, he's a guy who's done a lot of things.
And he talks about stuff. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen. It's back to the Mark Maron Show with Mark Maron and his fabulous guest, Bill Jackson. From New York. He's great.
What the hell?
All right, Jim.
Is this what you planned?
No. It is not what I planned. And I'm trying to be respectful. I mean, we've all been a little down and out before. We've all been a little down on our luck. And it's a rare thing to be able to help somebody that you had some respect for. You ever been in that situation?
Thank you. Jim, if I'm stepping on toes, I apologize. I just know that I'm better.
Oh, man.
Well, that's true.
Well, I don't mean it in a bad way.
Okay. All right. Let's just not do this. Jim's going to do a bit now, Bill. So why don't you just sit tight?
I'll stay out of it. I won't say a word. I'll stop talking right now. I won't talk anymore.
The Bible's...
That'll be the end of it.
The Bible's... Okay. All right. The Bible's book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. But we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Milf Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Probe, Utah. Your grace...
Heed my words, sinful earth dwellers, and submit your prideful buttocks to the searing hot pain of Saint Michael and his freakishly large sword. Step lightly, ye soiled lilies of the valley, for ye are nothing more than sinners in the hands of an irritable God, and your souls the soiled crucible of Tom Cruise's afterbirth crudités. For the day is coming when all proud evildoers, abstainers of meats, and anybody who regularly watches American Adventure will be thrown upon Christ's divine nude pyramid right in between Dom DeLuise and Paul Sorvino. For the end times are near. You may recalleth how thrice abdominals ago, look it up, I spaketh unto thee about a naked man who was arrested after getting stuck in his stepmother's chimney. The weeketh after that, I told you about a man who survived after 12 nails were driven into his head. And the weeketh after that, I told you if you're going to drink 3 bottles of Night Train Express and get stuck naked in your stepmom's chimney, don't be surprised when she takes a nail gun to your stupid-ass head. But now something even more heinous, something so luciferic, something so rapture-impending has happened. It can only be explained by me here, now explaining to you what it is here to you. Satan! Your powers for conjuring up awkward sentence structure is strong today. Never mind that. For according to my news source of choice, StopTheACLU.com, a student newspaper at the University of Oregon has published cartoons showing Jesus Christ naked with an erection. Mark, I want you to look upon this abomination. Pass it around if you want. The end times are clearly upon us. For it was prophesied in Revelation 10 Geese Elaine, and I quoteth, "And the day will arrive when purveyors of the dark art of pencil drawings and thought balloons shall make light of our Savior's penis, setting the stage for their doom. So shall also fans of Dick Brown pay the satanic price of chuckling at the exploits of Hager the Horrible and his amusing dog Snert." End quoteth. Well, there you have it. It's the most obscene assault on Christianity since Michelangelo carefully glazed a vagina on the Virgin Mary. This is clearly a sign of the Antichrist, for only Satan could have an erection that majestic, that firm, that... Can I have my picture back?
Yeah, sure, Cardinal.
Mark, I'm getting emotional.
Yeah.
Pray with me by reciting the words of Jesus. "And to his flock upon Mount Olivet, Jesus says, O Lord..."
O Lord.
Jesus says, "Cast your dark vengeance upon the harlot church."
Cast your dark vengeance upon the harlot church.
"And the fornicating beasts within."
And the fornicating beasts within.
Ah! I didn't say Jesus says. You're out. You can't be raptured. But none of that matters now, Hebrew apostate. Because, well, you're all kneeling at the scaly phallus of Beelzebub, I'll be sitting at the throne of Jesus and his financial advisor, Stanley Birnbaum. Till then, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep the light on for you. In hell!
Thank you, Cardinal. That was very moving. Now, see, that's the kind of radio we do here, Bill Jackson, a radio veteran.
Yeah.
That's interesting stuff. I don't think any of that was going on when you were at the beginning of talk radio.
No, we wouldn't cross the religious line that hard,
uh-huh.
I think.
Yeah, well, we take some liberties here in the name of satire. Satire is a big part of our show.
I can only assume we're on the air kind of late at night.
What the hell does that mean?
Late at night?
Well,
for you,
well,
yeah.
I mean, what the hell does that mean?
I don't know. Sacrilegious things usually occur later.
Well, we're on from 10 to 12 Pacific time, but people can...
10 to 12 Pacific time on AM radio.
Yeah, but people can podcast. They can podcast.
They can podcast.
Yeah.
What exactly is that?
Wow. iPod, you know, the iPod.
And what do they do?
They can download the show.
They broadcast to you? On a pod?
They put it's an iPod. You know what an iPod is, don't you?
It's an MP3 player,
MP3, yeah. I've heard of those. Yeah.
Digital.
Sure,
digital.
Sure. You got thrown on the brig once by them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What?
Look, what do you... Now, hey, Jim, did I see... is somebody come? Is there somebody here? Is something happening? Anything? No? Yeah? Is Boots Riley over here? He's in the house, as they say.
There's always something happening on Mark Maron Radio.
Oh, man. Boots Riley from Coup is going to be here in just a minute. And later in the show, we have, we have the author of Accidental Genius, How John Cassavetes Invented the American Independent Film. Did you ever interview Cassavetes?
Oh, Cassavetes was great. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Jack
Cassavetes.
We'll be back.
Amalgamated Bank means people.
I've seen the manager like 56 times. I've talked to everybody at the main office in Kansas City, but I still have over $1,000 in return check fees, and it's for the same check, and it's not even mine. It's somebody else's check. They are debiting my account with someone else's check. How can they do that? Why are they doing this to me?
Amalgamated Bank. Our fees are slightly lower than everybody else's.
Amalgamated Bank.
Amalgamated Bank. We're here to help families.
They lost our mortgage payments. That can't be legal.
Help themselves.
They took all our money. We're ruined.
Amalgamated Bank.
Bush and Hussein together in bed, giving H-E-A-D head. Y'all heard what we said. Billions made and millions dead.
There we go. Come on.
Work it out. Live from Burbank, California,
where whales come to strand themselves. It's the Mark Maron Show.
It's the Mark Maron Show.
And now
here's me, Bill Jackson,
right,
and
okay.
Mark Maron.
All right, thank you,
this
fellas.
How long is this going to go
it's
on, Mark?
It's just one day, Jim. It's just one day, and we're being nice. Remember, we're being nice. Welcome to the show. If you're just tuning in, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, that sound you heard coming in was The Coup. Boots Riley was one of the co-founders of the hip-hop group The Coup. The Coup made cultural waves for the provocative cover of their last album, Party Music, back in 2001. We'll get into that. Boots and The Coup have a new album out, which that song you just heard is from, Pick a Bigger Weapon. That mixes a little radicalism with some Marxism, some sex, some funk, and that's been your signature since 1991 when you started. But that wasn't the beginning for you, Boots, was it? You've been an activist since you were a kid, am I right?
Yeah, you know, an organizer showed up at my house when I was 14 with a van full of girls my age and said, "Hey, do you want to go to the beach?" And I was like, "Yeah, but we're going to go to this cannery strike."
Yeah.
And so, I jumped into the van.
So where'd you grew up in Oakland?
Oakland, California. Yes, I did.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, that's up by San Francisco.
Up in the Bay Area.
Yeah, maybe you kick it there sometime. Yeah.
Do you kick it up there, Bill?
I have kicked it.
Okay. He's just trying to get his chops back.
Okay.
So now, that in the 60s, I don't know when you were born or how old you are. I don't know if you talk about that. But, I mean, Oakland was like a hotbed of cultural activism.
Well, I was born in 71. I moved to Oakland in... when was that? When I was six. But, yeah.
1977.
All right. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
But thank you. It definitely was. And my parents were all part of the San Francisco State strike. And, you know, my father was in the NAACP and CORE and in other radical groups later on, SDS,
uh-huh.
Progressive Labor Party.
So when you started doing hip hop and when you started rapping, so you from the very beginning, you're one of the few I think that actually had a political agenda, that had an agenda in terms of facilitating change and being radical. What drove you to do that? I mean, do you still consider yourself? I guess what I'm trying to ask is, because that's a great satirical song about Bush and Hussein in bed, and we talk about this kind of stuff every day on this network.
Yeah.
And how is it being received out there? Is it working? Because it seems like a lot of hip hop's not doing that now.
Well, I mean, it's what people want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we hear about hip hop, and first of all, it's not the only kind of hip hop that's out there. But what we hear about on major radio stations is hip hop that talks about I have this money. There's actually a old song that says everybody in my projects is rich.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the reality is that a lot of people were shocked because of that when Katrina happened, that some people didn't have money to get the bus to get out of town or money to get
right.
So the music that I'm doing is speaking to people's reality, so it is received.
Yeah,
pretty well.
Most people in this country, I talk about the aftermath of Katrina a lot. I got somebody at the New York Times who I talked to. We talked to her yesterday. I think that was probably the biggest wake-up call that certainly this country has ever seen, just in terms of acknowledging that there are people that are poor in this country. Most people don't even think about it.
Yeah, you know, everybody's so privileged here. Like, yeah, well, maybe compared to some other country that the U.S. has economically demolished, we are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are still people that die of malnutrition in the United States.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
That's happening all over the place. So, yeah,
And you take it upon yourself. The responsibility of the musician is to raise that awareness.
Well, I'll put it like this. I don't even... Maybe when I was young, I was real mechanical and I have to say this and have to say that. I just make music that I feel, and those are the things that I think about. So it goes into my music. And I think that's the responsibility of the musician, is to write music that encompasses all their feelings and their thoughts. And it's the responsibility of the human being to think about who they are in relationship to the world.
And to be honest about it, I think is what you're saying. Because I was reading something about this CD, which I listened to, and one of a fan, basically, the reporter, the reviewer, said it was a great CD, and it was different for you in that it was a departure from being as hard and radical as you used to be, and integrating a little more about your personal life, a little more about relationships, a little more sex in it, and that was giving it a full, well-rounded picture.
Yeah, it's definitely an album that, you know, is personal enough to where it took me some time to give it to my parents.
Oh, that's but, yeah.
But, you know, it for it to be real, it has to be personal. And that's how we deal with it. We don't, you know, in the morning, no one thinks about, most people don't think about their relationship to the WTO.
Right.
Or, you know, if they're going to go, you know, how is the free trade or the America's Agreement affecting their life? What they think about is their interaction with the system, their daily battle with the system.
And even if they think that, some people are so brain dead and kind of in a robotic state that they're just like part of the cog in the machine.
Yeah, I mean, and they're still dealing with it because we're cogs in the machine that don't even get taken care of as cogs should.
Angry cogs.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, yeah. Bill's a little pissed off.
Wow.
Yeah, he's out of work. But
it seems like a good question.
I think you should bomb Clear Channel.
Hey, how do you like that? Have you thought of that?
Unless they're willing to hire me. Then that would kind of switch things around a little bit for me.
That's a pretty good segue. That cover, now I remember it happening, and I'm sure you've had the conversation a lot, but the cover of Party Music, which came out in 2001, I just want to make sure I understand, because I was talking to my booker yesterday, that cover was, it got a huge amount of press. It was you and Pam standing in front of the World Trade Center.
I had a bass tuner. Pam had conductor's wands, and it was supposed to be a metaphor for our music destroying capitalism, and so a symbol of capitalism.
The Twin Towers.
Whether you like it or not, it was the Twin Towers.
And they were blown up right in the place where they got hit, and this was done like 3 months before, right?
A little bit more than that. Before.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
And actually, all the magazines that we sent it to, because when you send out your press, you send out the cover, you send out various pictures that people could. All these magazines chose to print it in August saying that this is the best album cover of the year. You know,
right.
Telling the publicist, like, wow, this is great.
Yeah.
Which none of them would admit that later, but it all was printed in all the magazines in August of 2001.
But do you ever in your head? I guess because I'm sort of a mystical person. Do you think that you know now? Obviously, you weren't. You had no idea any of that was going to happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, just to make clear is that you know what I talk about in my music. I talk about people coming together.
Sure.
And a movement being made by millions of people that will eventually overthrow this system. Mm-hmm. It's not something, I don't talk about individual acts of, you know, making political statements. So I did at the same time, I wanted it to be clear that the cover was a metaphor for the music.
Right.
And not just putting that out. So when it happened, you know, first I heard it on the radio. I didn't even, you know what it looked like.
Yeah.
But I got a call from the distributor, from the record label, saying the distributor wasn't carrying it before I knew what the images looked like.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah. I just, like, when things like that happen, I mean, are you a mystical person? Do you think that you tapped into something beyond coincidence? Like, you know, you saw the future somehow?
No.
Oh, man, just me?
No, I'm not into that kind of stuff. I think, you know, I think what it is that, you know, for a lot of different reasons, there are that people do not like this government and do not like the people, the particular business interests that are backing it.
Absolutely.
You know, and so there are a lot of different, you know, instances. Matter of fact, that cover, the photographer wanted the White House to be blown up. But I was like, that's cliche.
Right.
Everyone's done that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, because that's been in all kinds of movies, all kinds of cartoons. And really, my whole point in a lot of my music is that it's the politicians are just puppets.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're puppets of the corporations and the business interests in the world.
And so, I think that it's more, as opposed to some mystical thing, it's just that I happen to pick a target that was on a lot of people's minds.
Our guest has been Boots Riley. The new album is excellent. It's a Pick or Bigger Weapon. I really appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Do you? I know I got a link to the album on our site. Do you got a website?
You could go to myspace.com/thecoolmusic or thecoolmusic.net.
Right on. Thanks a lot, Boots.
Yeah.
You're great.
Good.
Yes, I am.
Show your ass, they ain't handing out no more cash. Mama's imitate my logo fast, that is state safety open blast. Now it's time for you to show your ass, they ain't handing out no more cash.
Mama's imitate my logo. Amalgamated Bank means convenience.
Their ATM wasn't even attached to the bank. It just emptied into the back of some guy's truck. What the f*** is that all about?
Amalgamated Bank.
They kidnapped and raped my sister!
Amalgamated Bank.
And now his arrest record is none of your business. Mark Maron.
Mark Maron and Bill Jackson here.
No.
It's going to be great.
Mark Maron.
Mark Maron.
My guest, who has been sitting in with us.
Bill Jackson.
No, Mark Maron.
All right. Jim Earl is my co-host, my sidekick, my comedic friend.
But I'm your official co-host for the day.
Bill.
No. There are no official co-hosts for the day.
Bill, I loved you when I was a kid. I think you're a great radio talent. I brought you on the show to learn from you and to pay some respect and interview you about who you interviewed.
Take it easy. Come on.
I'm cool,
let's
man.
Be cool, right?
I'm cool, yeah. And you're sitting in. I don't think that you should fight with Jim. Jim's job is secure, and I wish you the best of luck, and I think you're going to do fine.
Jim is very good for this show.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
So we're good.
Why don't you just take out one of your little sound effects things?
Oh, man.
Play with that for
okay.
The second.
Whoa. Let's have a conversation. Okay? Let's have a conversation.
I'm having a conversation. I'm all right.
All right. Well, here's the conversation. Did you guys hear about this Spanish Star-Spangled Banner? There was a British music producer, this guy Adam Kidron, put out a Spanish-language version of the United States National Anthem. And, of course, there was some flack about it. There's some people that are saying President Bush declared today that the Spanish, the national anthem should be in English. And, of course, with the immigrant issue, with May 1st coming up and the threat of a national boycott and 11 million plus people hitting the streets and trying to stop, business in this country to protest for immigrants' rights, this is a very loaded topic. And I personally think that the bottom line is that this guy, Adam Kidron, the guy who produced this, genius. I mean, he saw an immediate market of about 10 million people that might be interested in this. And I have a couple opinions about it. My first opinion is I think a Spanish national anthem would be very helpful to Spanish-speaking people, perhaps, who don't speak English, to learn the meaning of it and learn the words. No one is implying that it should become the way the national anthem is now. I think that it being out there is helpful. It's not a negative thing, Bill.
I can't understand any word of it, though. I don't understand what they're saying.
But you know the national anthem in English.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So in Spanish, it's not for you, but it could be for
right.
people that want to be in this country, that love America, have not learned the language yet, and it might even actually be a useful tool to teach some people the language.
Oh, say, can you see what would happen, though?
Right. What would happen?
There would be a section of the population that sang the Spanish national anthem, and then another section that sang the English. You might as well have a Chinese national anthem sung.
Sure, you
might
know.
As well have.
Jumping on board with that, Earl?
Absolutely. You know, there are like 80 million people of German ancestry. Why not a German national anthem?
No. Wait. This is the American national anthem translated into
That's
Spanish.
That's what I mean. Why not translate it into German?
Well, look, if I lived in France, okay, and I don't understand French, and somebody said, this is what we're saying, this is it in English, so you know what you're saying, I'd be like, well, thank you. I thank you for helping me understand what the national song is.
But the French want you to learn their language.
That's fine. Maybe I will from the national anthem. That's
what are you doing living in France and you don't even know their language?
Who the hell's side are you on now?
That's no kind of respect.
All right, look.
Can you imagine how long it would take for a ball game to start?
Okay, easy.
And now the German
All
national
right, look,
anthem.
We've got this thing I want to throw to now. You
now
heard about
Swedish.
Al-Qaeda news. Al-Qaeda people, the people in Al-Qaeda have been putting up news broadcasts on the Internet. We picked one up yesterday. Here's the Al-Qaeda news.
From across the nation, around the world, and under a burqa, this is Al-Qaeda News, with hosts Mohammed and Mahmoud.
Well, it's springtime, and we all know the first sign of spring.
Everyone dies!
I am Mohammed.
And I am Mahmoud.
This is Al-Qaeda News. Tonight's top... wait a minute. Which camera am I on? Camera 1, camera 2. Camera 1, camera 2.
Camera 2! Camera 2! Camera 2!
Tonight's top story. Iran is going to nuke Israel. U.S. is going to nuke Iran. People, why the hate?
Yes, yes. Nobody wins a nuclear war. Except us!
Remember, you cannot hug your children with nuclear arms. But you can clothe them in dynamite and send them into a crowded hospital.
Yes, that works fine. Just ask my nephew, Jalid. No, wait a minute, you can't. Oh, boy, that was a closed casket funeral.
Oh, yes. And now, a report from our travel reporter, Tina.
Hi, Tina.
Hi, guys. Hey, need to get away from it all? Why not kill two birds with one stone?
Or many infidels.
Don't interrupt, Tina.
Oh, don't criticize me.
You're an idiot.
No, you're the idiot.
No, you're an idiot.
No, I beg to differ. No, you're the
idiot. If you're planning a vacation, why not take along a trailer from Iraq? The Iraqis have a set of weather balloon trailers that are comfortable for travelers. Yet, for some reason, they attract U.S. air attacks. Why not ride one to a country you've always wanted to see and destroy? Visit beautiful Saudi Arabia or historic Israel. This is Tina for Al-Qaeda News saying, happy traveling.
Oh, no, you can... wait. Thank you, Tina, for that report.
I praise Allah for the day we kidnapped her. All those other reporters we captured were so depressing.
Yes. Well, that's all from us. This is Al-Qaeda News signing out saying, that's the way it is.
But not for much longer.
That's scary stuff, huh?
Wow. Yeah. That was real, huh?
Yeah, it was from, we pulled it off the web from the Al-Qaeda News website.
Wow. Yeah.
So look, we're going to come back. I got Bill Jackson in the studio.
We'll be right back.
And we'll be back with the author of Accidental Genius about John Cassavetes. Why don't I see his name here? Marshall Fine.
Now, he just had a massive oil spill. Mark Maron.
And Bill Jackson here on the Mark Maron Hour.
I'm sorry.
2 hours. Two hours.
I'm sorry, Jim. I'm sorry, Jim.
He doesn't even know it's longer than an hour.
All right.
For 2 hours. Mark Maron Hour for 2 hours.
Okay. This is it. All right, this is the last half hour.
No, I respect the man. I like him, but I just, can't abide by him.
All right, okay.
I'm sorry, trying to help.
We have a guest. Can I do this? Can we do this, fellas?
Sure, I love guests.
All right. Yeah, okay. Marshall Fine has written a couple of books about true individualists when it comes to filmmaking. One was about Sam Peckinpah. Now John Cassavetes with the new book, Accidental Genius, How John Cassavetes Invented the American Independent Film. He is in town for the L.A. Times Festival of Books and will be on an independent film panel on Sunday at 3 p.m. If you want to go to that, I got a link on the site. Welcome to the show, Marshall Fine.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
It's great to talk to you. I got to read the other book. I remember it was called Bloody Sam, right?
That's right. It came out about 1991.
Man, I just want to talk Peckinpah now. I didn't realize that book was out there, and I literally, let me be honest with you, I have, once a year, I have a Sam Peckinpah Film Festival at home.
And which one's your favorite?
Honestly, I think Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, I just rewatched 2 weeks ago, and I love that movie. I love The Wild Bunch a lot. I'm even a Straw Dogs fan, to be honest with you. Ride the High Country, I it's not bloody enough for me yet, though I like it. So I would say the one I've rewatched the most are Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia and The Wild Bunch.
Well, those are two of the best.
Yeah, which one do you think is his best?
Well, I really love The Wild Bunch. I mean, I watch that on a regular basis. But you got to be kind of twisted to love Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, because that's a pretty out there film, but I really like it.
Oh, man, when he's sitting there talking to that head in the bag, you can't beat that.
You can't. I mean, no, but who's done that? Who else has done that?
Well, I think that, what's his name, Jones?
Jones?
I always forget the name of that movie, The Three Burials of...
Melquiades Estrada, yes.
Yes.
But that's a whole body.
That is a whole body, but it's a direct lift, is it not?
Well, I'd say so, yeah. Okay. Dragging that body around with the ants on all over it, it's pretty amazing.
It's great, but it's not. I think it's an homage or an appropriation of Sam.
Yeah, Deadwood is doing that now, talking to the head in the body. I mean, in the bag.
They are?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's probably directly from Sam. I just think Sam Peckinpah's a genius, and I think John Cassavetes is a genius, too. I just have not. I don't think I've watched all his movies. Now, in terms of this new book, Accidental Genius, how are you defining independent film?
I see independent film as being films made by people who have to make those movies, who have a passion, who have a vision, who just, there's a movie that they've got to get made no matter what, no matter how many people tell them you can't do this, you can't have the money. They get out there and find some way to get that movie made. Certainly that was the watchword of everything that John made on his own, to the point where he put his own money into the project.
Yeah, because in the history of movies, there have been some actors that have gone into the production mode, that were actually shut down. Like I think John Garfield, Ida Lupino made a few, and that happened years ago, but that's not really independent film.
No, I mean, he was, how much more independent can you get than spending your own money? I mean,
that's the first rule
of Hollywood. You don't put your own money into the movie.
And you can definitely tell that it seems to me that Cassavetes is just recently getting his due as a filmmaker because they weren't successful in a mainstream way, and people didn't appreciate his genius until this new generation of independent filmmakers.
I think that's true. I mean, there are a couple of them that sort of were breakthroughs that surprised people with how much of an audience they reach, films like Faces, and a woman under the influence.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, yeah, his movies really were unappreciated. People said, oh, well, these are home movies because he shot them at his house.
And The Killing of a Chinese Bookie, that got a little good. That did all right, didn't it?
No, that one was a big flop. That one did no business at all. In fact, they pulled it like after 3 days, unfortunately.
And that had some studio support, no? Or
no, that was him again. That
oh,
was,
really?
He
all
made
him.
A bunch of money on Woman Under the Influence and said, I've spent a whole year. Just he distributed Woman Under the Influence himself, and so he said, I've spent a whole year just distributing this movie. I want to make a movie. He wrote that. He says, I've got this money from Woman Under the Influence. Let's make another movie.
So he was a great actor. He remained an actor throughout his career. He's very intense, emotional, unpredictable, very menacing, and his films have that same quality. So you say that he had to make these movies. What drove him?
He wanted to make movies about people that he didn't see movies about. I mean, he wanted to make movies about ordinary people and the crises and the dramas in their lives. Because, Hollywood, the movies they make tend to be about people at high points or at low points and not really sort of in the middle. And he wanted to show just what people's lives were really like. He was really interested in everyday emotions, everyday events, divorces, marriages, romances, that you don't see in sort of an ordinary way depicted as they really are in film.
We're talking to Marshall Fine. He is the author of Accidental Genius, How John Cassavetes Invented the American Independent Film. It's interesting that by reading some of the book and hearing some other stories, that for an actor, he was not that easy on actors in his film in the sense that he didn't give them a lot of direction, did he?
No, he expected them to come with the character, that he wrote it for them. They're the ones that were playing the character, so he didn't want them asking him questions about what this character would do. They were playing the character. They should know what the character would do.
And he also left a lot of room for things to unfold, as you were saying about real human emotions and real human beings, that there are moments where you watch, and certainly in Woman Under the Influence, where you feel uncomfortable with the sort of pauses and with the sort of situations that are going. You want somebody to do something.
Well, I mean, that was part of his genius, was that he created a feeling that these people were living this in front of the camera instead of acting something out that was scripted. And everything that he did after Shadows was scripted, but he left it up to the actors, and this was really actors' cinema. He told them they weren't playing for the camera. The camera was playing for them. The camera had to follow them and keep up with the actors. The actors weren't hitting marks or trying to find their key light. It was about finding the truth in the moment and getting the camera to follow them and capture it. It was almost sort of a documentary approach to the camera work.
So it took a certain special type of actor, and he had sort of a crew that he used, obviously his wife Gina Rowlands and Peter Falk and Ben Gazzara, and they actually evolved with him, because you said in your book that a couple of those guys thought they were down for the count career-wise when he resurrected them.
Well, both Ben Gazzara and Peter Falk had reached points in their career where they were just not getting the kind of projects that were fulfilling them. They were both doing TV. They hated that. They weren't getting the movie parts they wanted. And here comes Cassavetes, who barely knew either of them, said, hey, I've written a movie for the three of us to do, and that was Husbands. And it really sent all three of them in a new direction.
Yeah. So now, right now, who do you see? There are some new filmmakers that draw directly from Cassavetes, and I know Sean Penn aspires to it, but doesn't really quite hit it, even though there's good moments in his movies. Who do you think is really sort of jumping on the legacy of Cassavetes now?
Well, I don't think there's anybody who's doing what he did in terms of having a vision that they're true to and stick with. Maybe someone like Hal Hartley, but he's a little arty for my taste. I think Sean Penn comes closest in terms of the kind of emotions that Cassavetes was after, because you watch these movies of Cassavetes, and they're just so raw. I mean, even, today, 40 years later, you watch something like Faces, and it's incredibly raw. It's right there on the, these people are just living this right in front of you. So I don't see anybody really doing that. It seems to me like most of the independent filmmakers have that one movie in them, and they get it made, and then Hollywood comes calling, and they run off and make a superhero movie.
That's right. So that Face is the one with Seymour Cassell as a really young guy and the wives.
Seymour Cassell and Jenna Rollins and John Marley and Cassavetes' secretary. Her name was escaping me at this moment.
The woman with the beehive. She was great.
Yeah, and she was a secretary and at Screen Gems, and she worked down the hall, actually. She was Robert Altman's secretary, and Cassavetes would call her and say, "Hey, I want you to read this with me." And he cast her in the movie.
Did she have a career after that?
Yeah, she did. She worked for Milos Forman, and she did a lot of work in TV.
Now,
and her name is still escaping me.
I wish I had the book in front of me. Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out, and I'll save you after the break.
Okay.
I'll go look it up, and I'll remember it. But that's interesting you bring up Altman, because it seems that Altman, similar trajectory with a little more studio support, no?
Well, yeah. I mean, Altman is definitely someone who's followed his own vision and who's worked, followed his own particular point of view with varying degrees of success, and he's worked in the studios, and he's worked outside of the studios, and he's as ornery as Cassavetes, I guess.
Is that the next book, Marshall Fine?
Altman? No, I don't think so. Actually, I'm making the documentary right now.
About?
Rex Reed.
Really?
Yeah.
That should be funny and irritating.
Well, he's a funny guy, and I see it as sort of, he was the beginning of contemporary celebrity journalism.
Oh, okay, that's an interesting angle. Let's go back to I want the book about Cassavetes is called Accidental Genius. I want to talk to you, kind of bend your ear for a couple minutes about Peckinpah.
Okay,
if I could indulge you, what do you think drove Peckinpah? Because he was known as he was an angry little man, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, he definitely had that Napoleon complex going
okay.
on. He was had small man syndrome. He was always picking fights with bigger guys. He was always pushing people, testing them. To see just how much he could get away with, and if you stood up to him, then he respected you, and if you didn't, then you were his.
So he sort of lived that sort of ideal of his movies. There is some sort of weird psycho, not homoerotic, but certainly they're definitely weird man movies, aren't they?
Well, yeah. Well, his movies are about a sort of a code of honor, and I mean a lot of them are about sort of the end of an old way of living and the arrival of the modern age.
The Ballad of Cable Hogue.
The Wild Bunch. These are about, even Ride the High Country, these are about people who have outlived their time and are still hanging on and trying to live by an old code that nobody really honors anymore.
And there's also the weird kind of impotence in Bringing the Head of Alfredo Garcia and in Straw Dogs, where he deals with some pretty strange sexual themes.
Well, yeah, these are men who have sort of given up that kind of masculinity and have to reclaim it.
Yeah, I love those movies, man. They're crazy. So what about, tell us a little bit about the event on Sunday so people can go down there.
Well, this is a panel discussion about independent film. It'll be me, Ken Turan, who's the film critic for the L.A. Times, and Peter Biskind, who wrote the book Down and Dirty Pictures about Miramax and Sundance, and he also wrote Easy Rider's Raging Bulls.
Yeah, I talked to that guy. He's a good guy.
Film of the 70s. Well, I have an argument with him, but that's beside the point.
What is it?
Well, just I feel like that Down and Dirty Pictures, he had an agenda that really had nothing to do with independent film and more with his personal problems with Harvey Weinstein and Robert Redford.
He's been accused of things before. He's been accused of manufacturing information for the other book, too, though it's still a good read.
Well, it's entertaining reading, but, I thought that he was on an interesting track with Down and Dirty Pictures, but then it's like, he never missed a chance to make a joke about Harvey Weinstein's weight. He was, or Robert Redford,
yeah.
Sort of the icy, removed movie star.
So there might be a fist fight on Sunday.
Could be.
Okay,
could
be. So this could be a little exciting for a book festival. Thanks for joining us, Marshall Fine.
My pleasure, Mark.
Okay.
Thanks for having me on.
You take care.
Talking to you.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, you really, that was...
That was very insightful. I
You enjoyed that?
He didn't answer all my questions. That's what I was curious
well,
about.
You didn't ask them.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back in a second.
If you really believe Mark Maron is the one and true Christ, you won't want to miss his Short Order News coming up next. Amen.
And now he crashed his Ferrari. Mark Maron.
Here he is.
You running out of steam, Bill Jackson?
No, I was criticized by your producer.
What do you mean? Who said what?
He told me not to talk so much.
Wow.
Like, you know, everyone forms an opinion of me, and I'm very sorry about that.
I want to talk to Jim a minute about something.
Let's go there now.
Okay. I wanted to talk to you about what I was saying before. It seems to me that it'd be something you'd be kind of worked up about, the idea that one of the Republican solution to helping with this energy predicament is to just drill in the Arctic Reserve.
Oh, yeah. Well, what?
And I really think that this is just a lot like there's something desperate and completely shamelessly unconscionable about it. As the analogy I made before when Bill interrupted it, was that of a desperate junkie stealing his mother's pain medicine from her bed table while she lays in the bed dying of cancer. I really think that this is I can't even fathom how people... Do you think that there are people in this country that actually say, hey, what the hell? It's there. Let's take it. That's the answer.
There's still people who think that it'll make a difference, even if they do drill in there. And by the time they get everything out, it'll be like 10 years anyway. But it'll make no difference at all in our oil supply.
And this is the other thing of why there's such a commitment to Iraq, even though almost 2,500 almost 2,400 Americans have died there, is that they think these neocon death cult zombie mother... Whoa! Where am I going with that?
MFers?
Huh? Where am I going with that? Man, I'm... Thank you, Bill.
Oh, sorry.
It's all right. No, I think that was the appropriate time to do that. What I was going to say is that the spigot out of Iraq that used apparently at a top peak production, 3.5 million barrels a day came out of Iraq. Now about 2.0 million are coming out, and apparently, according to oil industry analysts, it's going to take years and years to do the repairs necessary to make that an oil producing nation again. And on top of that, it's going to cost billions and billions of dollars, not to mention all these people that are dying over there because of this stupid war.
Now, what do we import, like, no, we only produce like 6% of our total oil.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to import everything else. Even if we did go into Anwar and take everything out, it still would be worthless.
Right.
You know?
And on top of everything else, Iran, if they decide to do some sort of boycott, to just stop production. They are the second largest oil producer in the world. And if they just, and this is somebody's, you know, they're about to drop nukes on. They could just say, look, well, we might not produce oil today. And then the prices could go up to like $6 or $7.
I think in short term, it would be very bad, but in long term, it would be the best thing that ever happened to us.
Really?
Yeah. It would force us to do something about how we use energy.
They can run it on the sun, man. So this weekend, what are you doing this weekend?
This weekend I may be going over, the Bill Jackson show, over at the theater.
You got some friends that are doing a show.
Well, he's talking about a show that's very good called The Tomorrow Show at midnight on Saturday nights at the Steve Allen Theater.
Okay.
But my friend Craig Anton does a show called The Idiots.
With Ron Lynch. I know those
Ron
guys.
Ron Lynch is in that, yes.
Yeah.
It's every first and third Friday at the UCB Theater on Franklin there.
That's awesome.
Every first and third Friday at the UCB Theater.
So you're hanging around there trying to get work, too?
I go everywhere. I am everywhere. Right now, I am everywhere.
I'm going to be at the Improv tomorrow night. That's Saturday, 8 o'clock and 10:30. I will also be... at the SPCA LA in Long Beach, hanging out with stray doggies and cats. If you want to come down there from 1 to 3, you can go to ktlk.com and get details on that. Also, you can go to markmaron.com and pick up a lot of the stuff you miss. If we are preempted by sports or whatnot, usually it's there. So go there, and you can also shoot us an email or leave, you know, or hang out and blog with the people.
Might be a Flippers game tonight.
Bill,
I don't know.
There is no Flippers game tonight. Bill,
huh?
Bill.
Oh, no, it's burning.
All right.
What is the steam? Sorry.
Your machine?
Oh, no.
You've got to get up to speed.
Oh, no.
I wish you the best of luck. Hey, look,
it
folks. A lot happened in the news today, and we here at the Mark Maron Show don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed, so here's tonight's short order news. Chevron Corporation, the number two U.S. oil company, said today its quarterly earnings rose 49% to $4 billion, topping Wall Street expectations. The higher prices are partly caused by anxiety over a possible confrontation with Iran, as well as the oil company's desire to put a little something extra aside to get them through the nuclear winter. After months of disputes over the future of Ground Zero, construction finally began on the 1,776-foot Freedom Tower that will rise on the site of the World Trade Center. The tower will feature the latest technological innovations, and just to set it apart from other buildings, it will feature a big bullseye on the top. A California woman is suing her former employers because she was spanked in front of her coworkers as part of what the company said was a camaraderie building exercise. The employers of the company are now serving a timeout for their actions. And that's the short order news for today.
Spanking.
They're taking a timeout. Do you like spanking, Bill?
No.
So, Bill, where are you living here in California? What neighborhood are you?
Well, my van could be almost anywhere.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
That's
great. You're like living in a van and stuff.
It's comfortable.
It's free. You're free.
It's comfortable.
It's sad.
I can be anywhere at any time.
I want to thank my guest tonight. I think Boots Riley was great. I think
a lovely gentleman.
Yeah, I like talking to Marshall Fine. You can get Boots Riley, Pick a Bigger Weapon. That's out now. Marshall Fine's book, Accidental Genius, about John Cassavetes, is out. Matt Privet, the metagenderist, was very interesting. Were you here for that? Did you get any of that?
Gesundheit.
Uh-huh. And, of course, Bill Jackson, I appreciate it. Thank Andy on the board and Sweepy Bill Kolar for producing the show. And Jim Earle, of course, thank you. And I want you to have a good weekend. It's a big sign-off. Next week, Andy Dick is going to be in the studio. Harry Shearer is going to give us a buzz. Greg Dooley of the, I think he was in the Afghan Whigs. And he's got a new record out and some things to say. And from the Center of Reproductive Rights, Nancy Northrup is going to tell us about the reproductive rights, you know, forecast and how that's going to be used for these midterms. What else?
I need a job.
Have a good weekend, sheeple. Lynn Carlin was in Faces.